This week's episode of SIW Radio is brought to you by Thought, a leader in SSL digital certificates. To learn more about how Thought's SPKI program can save you time and money, download their free guide to managing multiple digital certificates from securityinfowatch.com/thought, THAWTE.
Well, this is episode 18 of SecurityInfoWatch.com's SIW Radio podcast series. And starting with this episode, we're going to do a pretty neat thing. We've brought in Kevin Beaver, CISSP, who's been a regular writer for Security Technology and Design for quite a while now. And we're going to present to you, the physical security professional, a working sort of title of IT Basics for Security Pros. And in this podcast, we're going to actually look at the issues of web security. So you can talk the talk with your IT counterparts and learn about web security, what it means for your realm, and the overall business risks that you're involved with. So first of all, let me tell you a little bit about Kevin. And Kevin's an independent security consultant. He's also an author, speaker, and expert witness. He's based in Atlanta with the company Principal Logic. Kevin, how are you?
Mighty fine, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Great. You've got quite a few years of experience in IT. Do you can you give us a little background on it?
Yeah. I started out just doing general network administration, sort of worked my way up through the ranks, got into IT management, and then sort of branched out into security about 13 years ago. So if out of the 19 years that I've been in the IT field, I've been focusing on security for the past 13. And I essentially, in my consulting practice at Principal Logic, I focus on performing independent security assessments.
And you're also doing a little bit of writing, I hear.
That's
hacking
correct.
For dummies and hacking wireless networks for dummies.
That's correct.
And I should also mention, of course, this is a podcast. Kevin is also the creator of a new program called Security on Wheels, which are audio programs designed for IT professionals, sort of thing you can put in your MP3 player just like a podcast, but are educational programs to make IT professionals better at their job. You can get that at securityonwheels.com, and you're working on your you've got one out right now, and I think you said you're working on your second as we speak.
That's correct. I have my my little demo/intro audio program available for free download on the site, and as we speak, I'm working on my first official program titled Getting Started in Security.
So, and, of course, we've got a link to that on our notes page for this podcast. But we're going to go ahead and jump into today's topic, which is, again, web security essentials. And let's talk first about some of the basic web security terms and what they mean. Let's bring everyone up to speed on that, Kevin.
Okay. Well, I guess for starters, it's good to define what a website is and what a web application is. We hear these terms quite often. You know, you may even hear the term web server. Well, the web server is the actual server itself that's hosting up all this stuff. And more particularly, the website is more of just like a general marketing site. A general, like my website at principallogic.com. Here's me, here's my company, here's what I do. That's a website. Now, when we're talking about web applications, we're talking about a specific function that's being performed. You go to a website, but you're probably going to log in. You know, you may add stuff to a cart, such, you know, through e-commerce like Amazon.com or something like that. Or you may configure something, like you may configure some sort of physical security access control system, anything along those lines. So there is a difference between websites and web applications, and I just wanted to point that out, you know, start at a high level. The fact is, whether it's a site or an application, both of them have vulnerabilities that can be exploited. So that's a good definition or set of definitions to get rolling. The next big thing that we hear about in web security is SSL. It stands for Secure Sockets Layer. Technically, it's called TLS, or Transport Layer Security. SSL version 3.0 is technically TLS version 1.0. So anyway, SSL is essentially a way of authenticating what the system is that you're connecting to, be it a web server, or maybe the web server is looking back at the client, and it's a way of proving that the server or the client is who it says it is.
So is it kind of going, I know you, you know me, or what's happening in there?
Well, technically, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that sort of transparent to all of us. It happens so quickly, though. Essentially, there's two things that happen. There's the authentication component, which it's essentially like a driver's license or a passport. It says, yeah, I am who I say I am, and Mr. Server or Mr. Client, I'm gonna do this little handshaking process, and I'm going to negotiate some protocols, some authentication stuff, and some encryption protocols, just to make sure that we're on the same page, that we know who each other is, and we're going to be talking at the same level of encryption. So that's effectively what you see. You know, whenever you load up a web browser, and the down in the right-hand corner, a little lock may come up or a key may come up. It shows that you're on a quote-unquote secure website. Or you may also see up in the little URL field, instead of it saying HTTP, it may actually, or it should actually say HTTPS, which is basically the hypertext transfer protocol over SSL. It's essentially a way of securing web communication sessions.
So do they have it dialed in? Is it really secure?
It is. It is. Originally, SSL started out with 40-bit encryption, and this was, here in the U.S. at least, this was sort of a limitation put on by the federal government, so that if they needed to get in and do any wiretapping or whatever, and, you know, tap into communications channels, they could, but there were a lot of lawsuits, a lot of lobbyists got involved, and now we have 128-bit encryption over SSL, and even 256-bit encryption. So, yeah, I mean, it's really solid, it's really secure, and it's absolutely working as it was designed. The next definition that I was going to talk about, you know, we see a lot of things like CGI and ASP or JSP or JavaScript or ActiveX. You see that when you're browsing websites, or occasionally in your web browser when it loads up. What these are essentially programming languages or interfaces to back-end systems. It's a way for developers and web application professionals to allow your web browser to talk to a web server, and then maybe even beyond that back to the back-end database. So that's another thing that's sort of a generic web term, but it's also something that's pretty important when it comes to web security.
What else needs to be thought about or secured in terms of web security overall?
Right. Well, there's a lot of things, you know, going on behind the scenes and with web traffic and web communications and negotiations and whatever. There are a lot of issues at the web browser level that a lot of people don't think about. You know, we used to have the problem with pop-up ads covering our screen. You go to a website or you click on something you didn't mean to click on, and all of a sudden your screen's just filled up with these pop-up ads. Well, that was a security issue, and it's still a security issue to a certain extent, but the browser companies like Microsoft and the folks over at Mozilla with a Firefox web browser, they've found ways to secure that better and to lock it down. But you still have particular vulnerabilities at the client level. The one of the bigger issues has been at the server level. There's a lot of web application hacks, and two of which we've probably all heard about. The first one's called SQL injection, and the second one is cross-site scripting. Essentially, SQL injection is a way for an attacker to literally inject SQL commands into a web page, like a web form or a URL, and extract data directly from the database. Cross-site scripting, on the other hand, is sort of just the opposite. It's a way of manipulating the user and the user's web browser, essentially tricking them into clicking on a site and divulging information like cookies on the local web browser that may show configuration information. There are cross-site scripting issues that can exploit web browsers to the point where they can see all of your web browsing history, things like that. So it's these are pretty serious vulnerabilities. And the thing is, with Web 2.0 or with all these applications that are coming out where, you know, communities can sort of join into the website, you know, kind of like what MySpace does or Wikipedia, some of these other sites where anybody and everybody can post information or edit information. Well, these are called Web 2.0 sites, and unfortunately, there are people out there that are putting malicious code on these sites, and then when unsuspecting users browse over to these sites, their systems become infected, and it can potentially get out and spread around the internet exponentially. MySpace was exploited in that very fashion. So there's a lot of issues both on the client side and the server side, and like I said, traditionally it's been just at the server level, but now with Web 2.0, we're looking at more client-facing problems.
We're talking about, you know, web security risks and some of the weaknesses like the SQL injections and the cross-site scripting. How do those – let's talk about how they fit in. So a lot of our listeners are coming out of corporate security, perhaps a physical security background, or dealing with corporate overarching risk issues, business continuity. How do these web security issues fit into the what do they mean for the business as far as risk?
Well, they mean everything, or they should mean everything. I rarely come across a web application that doesn't have a critical database sitting behind it. Yeah, sure, there may be some basic websites for marketing purposes or some basic configuration pages or whatever that are web-enabled, but by and large, almost everything that I see that's accessible over the web, whether it be accessible from anybody out on the internet or accessible internally on the network, they have something behind them that's sensitive and critical. And the thing is, especially in the context of physical security, everything's web-enabled. If you can pretty much guarantee if it's got an IP address, if it can be connected to the network, then it's probably going to have a web interface. You know, with all these physical security control systems, with the cameras, with the access control, anything related to that, I have yet to see a system that wasn't web-enabled.
That's very true. I mean, we're seeing alarm panels that are sort of miniature web servers or that drive web apps. We've seen door access control panels the same way, you know, remote video surveillance that, you know, so that the security manager can, you know, log in from a remote office and see what's happening up there at the Baltimore office. And
absolutely,
it's certainly a big issue. I mean, those kind of changes happened very quickly in our industry, really. I mean,
I would say the interesting thing is we don't even know that we have these little web servers all over the network. We don't even know that this stuff is web accessible, because oftentimes, you know, that's not the traditional way to configure something. You configure it at the command line, right? You plug in something into the console port, or you telnet over to the box or whatever, but it's rare to, at least in the past, to have gone to any device, be it a physical access control system or a firewall or whatever, and actually manage it through a web interface. But like you said, now everything is, and the fact is that in a part of the big part of the business risk is the fact that it's we don't know about it, you know. And furthermore, you know, there's been this general, general belief that, well, as long as we have a firewall, as long as the critical systems are on the inside of our network, then we're okay. We're safe from the external hackers and whatnot. But that's absolutely incorrect. We have all these web-enabled systems in-house, and we have all of these users, all of these quote-unquote trusted users that are, you know, they're hired on as employees or brought in as contractors, and they're expected to do the right things. But as we're seeing more and more in the news, quite often they don't, you know, be it malicious, be it, you know, they've got some form of desperation going home with their finances or whatever, and people are actually getting in and poking around and creating problems from a web security perspective, even on the internal network.
And they may be, of course, looking at your public sort of image first, you know, your corporate business, your business e-commerce databases, but, you know, as these folks, you know, become aware that these physical security devices are available there in the internal network, once they're there, they're certainly going to look at them and explore them. What's your sense, you know, from the manufacturing community? Obviously, this has been such a whirlwind that this technology has been rolled out. Is your sense that these systems are being built in a secure fashion?
No, not really. In fact, I can give you a real-world example. I was performing a security assessment recently and found out that this manufacturing organization's wireless network was open and exposed to the world. Essentially, anybody that was within signal range, which could have been somebody down the street, somebody sitting in the parking lot, and of course everybody inside the building. But the fact is, it was accessible to outsiders. Well, that's not the problem. The big problem, once an attacker connected to the inside network, all he had to do was scan around and look on the network and see what systems were alive. And lo and behold, I found a system. It was basically the data center physical security control system, and it was web-enabled. And I thought, well, let me browse over to it and see what it does. And sure enough, it prompted me for a password. Well, I thought, oh, darn, I'm going to have to try to crack this password. But no, let me Google it real quick. Let me go in to Google and type in the name of the manufacturer, whatever model it said on it. I think it even gave the model and firmware number on the main homepage. And I also entered in default password. And within a couple of nanoseconds, came up, found a web page, and sure enough, here's the default username and password for this particular device. So I plugged that in, and lo and behold, the network administrator had not changed that information. And I got in, and just to see what I could do, you know, looking at all this from a malicious perspective, because that's how you need to look at your security, I could have deleted all the logs. I could have disabled all the temperature sensors. I could have disabled the fire suppression systems, the door access controls. I could have changed the time on the device, to sort of cover my tracks if I were a malicious intruder. I could actually view the camera that was in the data center. I could see who was in there. So, yeah, this is a big problem. Manufacturers are putting stuff out that are web-enabled with default usernames and passwords that are accessible to anybody in the world, on the Internet. And that one example right there is proof that there is a problem. And I think this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Now, I mean, default passwords are going to exist. I mean, the challenge, of course, and I think, you know, those of you who are listening, if you're buying security systems from folks who are installing them or you know, using the services of a network administrator, they need to be aware that in setting up the equipment, they have to change those default passwords. I mean, we have to know that, you know, there will be a default pack, you know, a password when it comes in the plastic shrink wrap, but it's got to be changed. I think that went a couple years ago. That was a big thing with a lot of the network video cameras that were being put out there, that people were just plugging them in, writing the IP address down and putting it into the video management system, but never changing the default password on these cameras. And
absolutely.
And I've been in and looked at a few cameras that way, and it's one of those things. Now, is your sense that the corporate IT manager or network administrator wasn't aware that these kind of systems were being put on the network? Is that why the default passwords weren't changed, or is it the integrator who should have changed that?
You know what? I think it's a little bit of both. I think sometimes the physical security team and the IT information security teams are not talking to each other like they should be. You know, we've been talking about convergence for ages. and how it's, you know, how it's supposed to work, and it's, you know, here's how to make it work, but in reality it's still not working all that well. They're still not communicating like they should be. So yeah, physical security managers and officers and corporate executives are putting this stuff in, and they're not notifying IT. They're bringing in these systems integrators. They're installing it on the network. They may not be notifying IT of it, or they may not be notifying IT of it quickly enough. And then you have, on the other side, you have this general apathy and sometimes disrespect from, you know, between the IT team and the physical security. Sometimes they don't like each other because they're you know, getting on each other's turf and on each other's nerves sometimes. So it's that situation where you see it a lot. You hear people say, well, that's not my job, you know. So I'm going to I'll let them do that. That's their stuff. They can manage it. But then, you know, the VP of audit hires somebody like me to come in and find security weaknesses on the network, and I'm going to find that kind of stuff and point it out and show what kind of business risks it can create. And it's a pretty big problem.
And believe it or not, whether you were too lazy to do it or not, it was somebody's job. So
absolutely,
it's got to be done. I should go ahead and mention that you know, we talked about things like, you know, the open wireless at this one business that you did an audit at. And we're going to be addressing some of these, you know, other IT topics in upcoming episodes. We've covered web security a bit. Kevin, if folks have to take away, what should they be taking away from this? Well, one, I guess, don't use default passwords. Don't let them sit there on your devices.
Right.
But let's summarize. You know, what should the physical security pros, again, be understanding about web security here?
Well, it's important to be mindful that web applications and websites, web servers in general, can be extremely complex, and that equals more chances for security problems. Anytime you have information systems complexities, you're introducing more and more issues that may not be found or may go unnoticed if they are exploited. And the fact of the matter is, you may have internal developers, you may be buying this equipment from reputable vendors and whatever, but there's no way that all developers and network administrators and vendors are going to think to secure everything. They're not going to be able to lock everything down in reality. And I've already mentioned this, but it's really important to remember that websites, web applications, and everything associated with that are vulnerable to both outsiders and insiders. So you got to make sure that you look at the inside of your network for security weaknesses from a web perspective. It's, you know, not just looking at your main website or e-commerce application or whatever. And one other thing, that this one strikes me as I'm still surprised that I see and hear this, but people say, well, we have a firewall or we use SSL, therefore our web servers are secure. And this is absolutely incorrect from a holistic perspective. You can't claim security just because you have a firewall and just because you encrypt the traffic going back and forth. Tentacle controls are only part of the picture here. And I would say, you know, given web applications, websites, visibility, and in a lot of cases the fact that they're the front end to the business crown jewel database systems, web security needs to be a primary focus. You know, we talk about patching, we look at wireless and things like that, but I'm seeing more and more web applications, they're just popping up everywhere. Websites are popping up everywhere, and they're just riddled with vulnerabilities waiting to be exploited, so it's got to be a top business priority.
And it's a business climate that says, you know, we've got to get these web applications out before our competitor does, and unfortunately sometimes that just doesn't leave the time, I guess, for the
time to market,
security auditing.
That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, it is. And so again, that's, you know, that's where our, you know, some of our security weaknesses are coming from, but
absolutely.
Well, we hope that you know, for those of you who are working in the security field, especially in the physical security field, we hope we've given you a little bit of a look inside a window into the IT world. And again, we're going to be covering some more great topics and checking back in with Kevin from time to time. If you're looking for more in-depth IT knowledge and business knowledge as an IT professional. Again, check out his securityonwheels.com and check back to siwradio.com where you'll find the Security InfoWatch podcast. So, Kevin, thanks for coming on the program.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This week's episode of SIW Radio was brought to you by Thought, a leader in SSL digital certificates. To learn more about how Thought's SPKI program can save you time and money, download their free guide to managing multiple digital certificates from www.securityinfowatch.com/thought, THAWTE.